All right, Grandpa, you ready?
Ready.
All right. First question. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a suburb of Boston, Massachusetts called Malden. Very different from the kinds of places that you know, because it's a town that goes all the way back to Revolutionary War days. Mm. It was first incorporated, I think, in like 1790 something. So it's a very old part of the country.
All right. Very interesting. Second question. What was your childhood like?
That's a question with a lot of parts to it.
When you think of your childhood, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
My younger years. You know, we had very different limitations than kids nowadays do. I could wander, I mean, at the age of 6 or 7 or 8, I could wander anywhere around my neighborhood as far as my feet would carry me, you know, without anybody worrying. My closest friends were, probably 6 or 8 blocks away, you know, so it was a fairly long walk. But it was a time when things were different than they are now. You know, parents didn't have to worry about their children being out playing. Parents could let their kids just go and say, "You'll be back by dinner time." My childhood is not something that I have a lot of memories of. But my younger childhood, now my older childhood, when I, you know, when I got into high school age, you know, I went away to prep school. So, you know, that's something that's very different from what most kids encounter nowadays. But I would say my childhood was a very normal childhood for somebody growing up in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, I totally agree. It is definitely a lot less stricter nowadays than I assume it was back then.
Yeah, I mean, strict is different, I guess, when you say it was stricter back, or stricter now than back then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we had limitations on what we could do, things we could do. There were, you know, there were things we definitely told not to do. You know, don't cross the street down there. That's a big street with a lot of traffic. Okay, never went that way. You can go this way, you can go up the hill, you can go around the corner, that's fine. But it's not like nowadays, where if one of you kids disappeared for over an hour, we would all be in a panic, mm-hmm. getting ready to call the police. You know, I would be gone from lunchtime till dinner time, 4 or 5 hours, you know, without ever having to communicate with my parents. We didn't have cell phones. You didn't go into somebody's house and say, "Can I use the phone to call home?"
No, because we usually have our own now.
Yeah, I mean, it was very different. Parents trusted us more. The limitations put on us were fewer. But I understand why they are the way they are now.
Man, it's kind of crazy to kind of... It feels strange to imagine me just kind of like leaving the house for 4 to 5 hours without having to communicate at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen nowadays.
It's pretty cool. Now, moving on from younger years, you were part of the military for how many years?
I was in the Army for 11 years. Mm-hmm. I went in after 4 years of college and went in. Well, it's kind of funny. When I left college, I became what's called 1A status. Means I was draftable. So I went around to the various military recruiters looking to see where I could find something that would interest me in the military. And I walked into the Army recruiter and saw pictures of helicopters on the walls. And I said, "I didn't know the Army had helicopters." And he said, yes, with Sergeant Bakerstaff. Said, yes, would you like to fly helicopters? Yeah, sure. And I took the tests and scored the highest he had ever had from his recruiting station. Went into the Army after basic training, went to flight school, and ended up flying in Vietnam for 2 years. After that, I left. After Vietnam, I came home, and I was a captain in the infantry at that point, and I commanded a basic training company for a few years, served on battalion and brigade staff, and then went to the infantry school at Fort Benning for what they call career course. That's where I met Mom. And I would have been career military, except that as I was coming up on promotion to major, we were experiencing what they called a RIF, reduction in force. It was the Jimmy Carter years, and he was just slashing the military budget, and people were being let go from the service after 18 years of service before retirement, with virtually no warning. I was an instructor at the infantry school watching majors with 18 years of service being riffed out with no warning at all. And at that point, Nana and I decided that we were going to leave the military on our terms mm-hmm. rather than being kicked out. But I loved the military life. I loved flying helicopters. I flew for 3,400 hours. That's a lot of flight time.
Would you say that probably the things you missed most about being in the service was flying planes all the time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had some opportunities after I left the service to consider going into aviation as a career, flying helicopters offshore for the oil industry and things like that. And I just decided not to. About 10 years after I left active duty, I got a call from the reserve components asking me if I wanted to go back in for a couple of weeks of helicopter refresher training. And I was just so absolutely thrilled at that. And I said, absolutely, send me. And they sent me to Fort Rucker, Alabama. And again, remember, it's 10 years since I've been in a cockpit. And they outfitted me with all the proper gear. We walked out to the flight line. I sat down in the seat of the helicopter, and it was like I was home again. It's like riding a bicycle. I knew where everything was. I knew where all the switches were. I got talked through the startup procedure, and I picked the helicopter up to a hover. Now, you have to understand that the hardest thing to do in a helicopter is hover close to the ground. It involves using all the controls at the same time. Cyclic control in your right hand, collective control in your left hand, pedals with both feet, and you're close to the ground. You're within 3 feet of the ground. And I picked the helicopter up to a stationary hover, and my mind went, oh my God, I can still do it. And it was the biggest thrill of my life up to that, one of the biggest thrills in my life up till that point, was to remember, it was just the fact that I still remembered how to fly. And anyway, that was really cool.
I mean, I can imagine, because that itself, having the ability to, like you said, being gone for 10 years, out of service, and then being reintroduced to it, and then just automatically having all that experience come back to you over again.
Everything. It's muscle memory, and it really lasted. Like they say, you never forget how to ride a bicycle, because that's muscle memory. This was the same thing. It all just
but probably felt, in a bigger scale.
Oh, much bigger scale. Much on a third of a million dollar scale.
Mm-hmm.
But
you can
still,
wreck a bike, but not a plane.
Yeah. No, it was definitely cool. It was definitely a thrilling experience.
Now, just to backtrack a little bit, you met Nana while in service with the military.
Yep, I was stationed at Fort Polk. I was running a basic training company at Fort Polk, and the Junior Officer Club Council. Don't ask me what their function was. I really don't know. But among the things they did, they planned social events. So they planned a party, and this was in the spring of 1973, I'm guessing. But anyway, my battalion commander, Colonel Bailey Talbot, called me into his office. I was incidentally the only bachelor in the battalion. All the other company officers, lieutenants, captains, were all married, all had families. I was the battalion bachelor.
Hmm.
I was also
That's the title right there.
I was also the project for all the battalion wives to try to get me to meet somebody. But Colonel Talbot called me into his office and said, the Junior Officer Club Council is sponsoring a dance at the Officers Club. Next week, be there. I said, what? He said, be there. So I went.
Wasn't an invite, it was an order.
It was an order. And I showed up in my best civilian clothes, which as I look back on it, just horrified me. The kind of clothes we wore back then were very, very different from what we wear now. And I didn't have very many civilian clothes at all. They mostly consisted of blue jeans and sweatshirts. But I went into the dance and was just sort of sitting around for a while, trying to get a feel for what was going on. It was very similar to high school dances, you know, all the boys on the one side of the room and all the girls on the other side of the room. But people were starting to mingle. I mean, after all, we're all grown-ups. I'm 26 years old at this point. You know, so I'm an adult. I'm not a teenager. But I was very nervous. And somebody, and I do not remember who at this point, grabbed me by the arm and walked me over and introduced me to these two girls. Basically stood me in front of them and said, here's Bill Hurdle. And one of them was Nana and the other one was her best friend, Marianne. And Nana was wearing a red, white, and blue outfit, which, considering that she was there at a military post, which I guess was very appropriate. She was at the time graduated from college, teaching down in Lake Charles, and she was the senior chaperone for the Phi Mu sorority. In other words, she was the chaperone for the girls who were coming from the sorority up here to this dance on the Army post. And she was wearing, I remember it to this day, it was a blue sleeveless top, a red belt, and a white skirt. And the white skirt was just barely covered her butt. I mean, mini skirt is not the right name for it exactly, but you know, knowing Nana as you remember her was not the way I remembered her at that time. I mean, I told her later at one point that the skirt was essentially a wide belt. But hey, you know, the old saying about love at first sight kind of thing?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't say at first sight, but I asked her to dance. And we danced almost without interruption. We kept getting interrupted by a black lieutenant whose name was Lawrence. I don't remember what his last name was. And Nana would dance dance with him very politely, and then come back to me. But the two of us danced together the whole night. Nobody else. I didn't even dance with Marianne, her best friend. And when the dance was over, the girls were going to be driven back down to Lake Charles in an army bus. And I asked her if she minded if I rode back to Lake Charles with her. This is like, on an army bus, it's like an hour and a quarter drive. It's only like about 30 miles, but it's an army bus. And so we sat on the bus together, holding hands, snuggling the whole way back to Lake Charles. And then I had to ride the bus all the way back. And it was like 2 a.m, you know, when the bus finally got me back to post and I could get in my car and go back to my trailer and get some sleep. And I had asked Nana, can I come see you tomorrow? And she said, yes. So around 8 o'clock in the morning, I got up and got dressed and climbed in my car and using her directions, drove down to Lake Charles, found her address, and found my way to her apartment. She really had not expected me to show up, certainly not at 9 o'clock in the morning. And she and her roommates were all still in their pajamas when I knocked on it turned out what was the back door. Because the way I came in, you know, looked around for apartment numbers, and I remember it was 109, and there was this one white door. All the doors had no numbers on them, but this one door had 109 written on it in like magic marker, not a regular sign. It was their back door. So I knocked on their back door, which opened into their kitchen, and totally surprised them all. They were all in their pajamas, and oh my God, you know what? Anyway, it was lust at first sight from that point on. We dated for 6 weeks. Every single day. She was on summer break. We were in between cycles, in between training cycles, so I didn't have work to go to. And so I drove down to Lake Charles virtually every day. We went out, she showed me around town. We just did all kinds of things for 6 weeks. And then I asked her to marry me.
Aww.
After 6 weeks, I said, would you consider being the wife of a soldier? Not a very romantic way to do it, but. And she said yes. And seven weeks later, we got married. So I met her in April, and we got married in June.
I did not know you married that quickly.
It was quickly. For me, it was simply a case of, again, I'd been a bachelor my entire life. Never dated, not at Fort Polk. There were no women at Fort Polk. I mean, there's a few nurses in the hospital, but there's basically no women around. And all of a sudden, something in my mind says, this is the one. Now is the time. You know, and so I asked her, and she said yes. We got married on post at the post chapel. Officiated by the chaplain of the post chapel. His name was Ralph Medlock. He was a Baptist. I was a Methodist. Mom was a Baptist. It was just sort of a non-denominational wedding, but it was a military wedding. It was what they call an Arch of Sabres wedding. My groomsmen were all military. They were all officers from the battalion. They were all in their blues uniforms, dress blue uniforms. The bridesmaids were all sorority friends of Mom's. And my best man was Jerry Ford, who was probably my closest friend there at in the battalion. And Mom's maid of honor was Aunt Nisi. And so after the ceremony, you know, and the ceremony takes place, you know, up on the altar, and the bridesmaids and the groomsmen are all, you know, lined up on the sides. Well, after, you know, you are now man and wife, you can kiss the bride and all of that, and the recessional march starts playing, the groomsmen, all the soldiers, line up on both sides of the place down from the altar and draw swords and create an arch of sabers. This is a military custom that goes way, way, way back.
That is really cool.
But it's not written down anywhere. We tried to find out if there was like a manual of arms for a military wedding. And there wasn't. We even had a heck of a time finding swords. We actually had to go to the National Guard armory down in Lake Charles to get military swords for the guys to wear. And so anyway, so I've got pictures of us coming out the Arch of Sabers, and we progressed down the aisle and then stopped out in the sides, in the, like the dressing area, for a couple of minutes while they reformed outside on the steps. And so we did the Arch of Sabers again, coming down the steps. Another military tradition is that the transportation from the wedding to the reception is a form of transportation appropriate to your branch. I was infantry, so we weren't going to walk. Bailey Talbot, my battalion commander, managed to talk the post commander into loaning us his parade jeep. This is we're talking about something that is all polished and brassed and polished brass and everything else. Whoa. With a stand-up rail so that we could stand up in the back like he would if he was reviewing the troops. He borrowed the commanding general's parade jeep, and that was to drive us from the chapel around the corner, down the hill, onto the main drag, and turn into the officers' club for the reception. This is a drive of literally maybe 250 yards. The driver is one of my drill sergeants, Sergeant Roberts. Sergeant Roberts pulls out with us in the back, Mom's train, you know, her veil is mm-hmm. blowing in the breeze, and out and around the corner, down the hill, onto the main drag, and he drives right by the officers' club. And I said, I leaned over and I said, "Sergeant Roberts, you missed the turn to the officers' club." He says, "I know, sir." I said, "Sergeant Roberts, are you going to turn around?" He says, "No, sir." And light dawned. I'd been had. This is Bailey Talbot's doing. They drove us all over post. We drove through the PX parking lot. We drove through the formations of troops, and the parade jeep with this guy in his dress blues and his wife with her veil blowing in the breeze, and you know, these formations of basic trainees. I'm saluting right and left, and there are people all stationed all over the place to take pictures of it. So I have pictures of all of that.
Oh,
and
wow.
They finally brought us back to the officers' club. But anyway, that was my stories of our wedding with Nana.
Wow. That is real. That's kind of funny.
I'll show you the pictures.
Oh, please do, because I will gladly put those into the project. I won't take any more of your time. I have one more question for you. Just because, time-wise, we might have
gotten... Yeah, we've used a lot. Yeah,
yeah, it's fine.
Once I get started.
Yeah, once again, I understand. I'm sure my teacher would understand. Final question I have is, out of everything you've ever experienced in your life, marrying Nana, becoming a parent, and joining the military, what lessons, I know this is kind of broad, this is kind of a silly one, but what lessons, like what are the most important lessons you've learned in your life?
My most important life lessons, I have to admit, come from having served in the military. One of the things you learn in the military is that you have to be a man of your word.
Mm-hmm.
You say you're going to do something, you do it. I mean, and that shows up in like little things. When somebody says be there at 3:30, you're there at 3:25, not 3:35. That's close, but 3:25. You're going to be there early. You said you'd be there. Make sure you're going to be there. Be a man of your word, and that implies a lot of things. People that you work with, people that work for you, people that you work under need to know that when you say something, you mean it. For people who work under you, you know, that means that you will follow through when directions are given. For somebody like your wife, when you say, I do, there at the altar, it means you will. And it doesn't mean that you'll get tired of it, 6 months later and decide to go with somebody else. It means you will be faithful. It means you will be honest. You will be reliable. You will be a man of your word. And when they say in sickness and in health, in our case, it was in sickness. Nana had cancer and fought it for 11 years and never missed a day of work. She was also a person of her word. Never missed a day of work due to her illness until the last 6 weeks. But I went to every doctor's appointment with her. I went to every infusion when she was receiving chemotherapy. I was there with her. My memories of Nana are tinged very, very strongly with images of doctor's offices and hospitals and, treatment rooms. Those aren't the good times, but those are the times that tend to stick in my memory when I'm having dreams at night. It's be a man or woman of your word. Otherwise, you can't be trusted. People won't trust you in little things. They're not going to trust you in big things. If you say, I'll do the dishes, you do the dishes. And you kids are really, really, really good at that. You have your chores and you take care of them without complaint. That bodes well for your future. I think you will all be good husbands and good life partners. But that's in small things and in big things. Be a man of your word. Be able to be trusted.
Be honest.
Be honest.
And be forthright.
Be able to be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And if that's a life lesson, I guess that's mine.
Thank you so much, Grandpa.
Okay.
This has been a lot of fun.